A reading from John 18:33 to John 19:22. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So are you a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into this world to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked him, "What is truth?"
After he had said this, he went out to the Jews again and told them, "I find no case against him. But you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" They shouted in reply, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a bandit. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. And the soldiers wove up a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they dressed him in a purple robe. They kept coming up to him and saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and striking him on the face. Pilate went out again and said to them, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no case against him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to him, "Here is the man." When the chief priests and the police saw him, they shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him. I find no case against him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die, because he has claimed to be the Son of God."
Now when Pilate heard this, he was more afraid than ever. He entered his headquarters and asked Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Do you not know that I have the power to release you and the power to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no power over me unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are no friend of the emperor. Everyone who claims to be a king sets himself against the emperor."
When Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus outside and sat on the judge's bench at a place called the Stone of Pavement, or in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover, and it was about noon. He said to the Jews, "Here is your king," and they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate asked them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but the emperor." Then he handed him over to be crucified. So they took Jesus, and carrying the cross by himself, he went out to the place that is called the Place of the Skull, which in Hebrew is called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with two others on either side of him, with Jesus between them. Pilate also had an inscription written and put on the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this inscription, because the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, in Latin, and in Greek. The chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write 'the King of the Jews,' but 'This man said, I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written."
Greetings to you from God, the source of all light and hope on this Good Friday. I always struggle with this name, Good Friday. Does anybody else? The name of the day, it feels a little bit like a bait and switch, doesn't it? It's not good. I mean, I'm always asking the question, why does he have to die every year? I don't think death is good. It's like, really honestly, when you think about it, the one terrible human condition that there's no cure for, and that no matter how far our technology gets us, we'll never solve. It's odd to call it good. But good might be somewhat of an old carryover in language that doesn't really hold up like some more modern words do. Good in Old English was, in fact, a synonym with holy at the time that they applied this name. Holy Friday. It feels a little bit less like a misnomer, doesn't it? I like to think about the word holy in terms of spatial dimensions. So scientists measure the world in three dimensions, length, width, height. Sometimes scientists would even consider time the fourth dimension. But for ages, religious leaders have used this word holy to describe a dimension of reality where the material, physical world made up of atoms gets really thin or even collapses, letting the dimension of the non-physical, the collective awareness of consciousness, the spiritual reality, if you will, of God and God's reign to break through. This all might sound weird, but most of us, honestly, if we think about it, we've either had an experience like this in our lives, or we've heard stories about holiness. Maybe it was for you or someone you know a near-death experience. Maybe it was healing from a disease that there should not have been a cure for, or no hope of recovery. Or maybe it was even just as simple as a feeling of energy or an overwhelming love in an unexplained kind of a way. I think that these holy moments, these moments where the distinction between the physical and the spiritual collapse, they often occur today around death and dying. Or at least I think we see it the most here. Ask anyone who works in hospice or a nursing home if they have had experiences with holy moments. I think we especially see these holy encounters as people pass from this life into the next. If we just look at the physical world only, the world of atoms and forces and energy, death and dying, it feels so final. It feels really like the end. It's terrible and it's sad and it's lonely. When we think about God's incarnation in Jesus Christ, the full embodiment of God in human flesh, emptying out all of God's power, laying it down so that God allows God's self to die, it is indeed overwhelmingly sad. But there is a glimpse, there is a hint of what is to come, a holy moment buried here in Jesus' death. There is a literal tearing of the veil in the temple that occurs, symbolizing this tearing down of the material and the spiritual dimensions of reality in this holy Good Friday memorial service. I promise I won't spoil the ending here. This is not an Easter sermon. It is a Good Friday reflection, after all. I want you to maybe dislike the name Good Friday because it doesn't really feel good, even though we already know the ending to the story and what is to come. But take some comfort in this thought here tonight. Jesus, I believe, has to die in order to begin the undoing of what we experience as the permanence of death. It is in this very horrible thing itself that we find the answer. It is in death that we find the cure for death. This indeed is a terrible, holy, dimensional shattering Good Friday. Grace and peace to you, my friends. Amen.